Blog Talk Radio.
Let's drop that old one that we used to do back in the day.
IQ.
Thank you.
you having these weak bitches ready to quit. Probably the reason why bitches be hating and waiting to comment on all of my shit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Probably the reason why bitches be hating and waiting to comment on all of my shit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Probably the reason why bitches be hating and waiting to comment on all of my shit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Probably the reason why bitches be hating and waiting to comment on all of my shit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Speaking the tongues, I be spitting the shit that be having these weak bitches ready to quit. Probably the reason why bitches be hating and waiting to comment on all of my shit.
Mike Hughes.
Speaking the things I be spitting this.
Thank you. on, children, it's time to slam.
Get out.
Get your house on, children, it's time to dance.
Get out.
Get your house on, children, it's time to clap.
Get out.
Get your house on, children, it's time to jack.
Get out.
Get your house on, children, it's time to stomp.
Get out.
Get your house on, children, it's time to work.
You are a ball. Saturday, November 30th, presented by Abounding Prosperity, along with the icon pioneer Larry Ebony and the Gulf Coast Prince Kendall Escada. Grand prize, $1,500, open to all realness, with the look and attitude of a celebrity. Mini grand, open to all sex sirens, for $500. Open to all best dress, $500. Open to all runway, $500. And performance blitz for $250. That's the Who Do You Think You Are Ball, Saturday, November 30th in Dallas, Texas. The location, Fiesta Event Center, 704 South Walton Boulevard, Dallas, Texas. Doors open at 7, LSS, at 8 p.m. Your commentator, the icon, Jack Mizrahi. Admission, $30. Tables, $100 before November 15th, $150 afterwards. There will be HIV testing at the event center and free admission for those that get tested. Again, the Who Do You Think You Are Ball, presented by Abounding Prosperity, the icon Larry Ebony, and Prince Kendall Escada. For more information, visit Facebook and the event page for November 30th. The Who Do You Think You Are Ball. The Carolina People's Choice Ball. Saturday, February 8th. 2014 in Charlotte, North Carolina. Grand prize, $1,500. Butch Queen Schoolboy versus Pretty Boy Realness. Grand prize number two, $1,000 for female figure runway. $500 mini grants include open to all best dress, female figure face. Butch Queen European versus All-American Runway. Butch Queen Legendary Performance. And many more $250 cash categories. Over $6,000 will be awarded on this night as we honor the fans' favorites and recognize the people's choice. Again, that's Saturday, February 8th, 2014, in North Carolina. Admission, $30 all night. $200, seats 10 with refreshments. Available for advanced purchase only. Your commentators, Jack and Stelvin Mizrahi. Your DJ, Bonalore St. Laurent. For more information, contact Overall Father Dede Khan, Chicken Ebony, or Marcus Escada, or see the Facebook event page at Carolina People's Choice Ball. See you there.
I now give to you.
You can take all the pictures you want.
The controversial.
Was not here as a friend of yours. She's a friend of mine, darling.
Unstoppable.
She won't make money off of my name, darling.
Legendary.
And that's why all the true beauties didn't come.
Mother Kelly Mizrahi.
What's going on, boys and queens? We're back on the air for another installment of the show. This is definitely the number one radio station in ballroom history, where you can definitely get all information ballroom all the time. We're definitely here tonight to have a lovely cast of different people from different agencies that has came together here tonight to definitely give y'all some information that all of you girls definitely need to listen to. So text your girlfriends, I am your girlfriend, and let them know we're definitely on the line. And this is definitely a show that all of you girls should definitely be tuning into, because you're definitely going to get some information that all you girls definitely need to know. Tonight we have a cast of, the Icon Jay. Manola Blahnik is on the phone. We have the Icon Jack Mizrahi is on the phone. We have the legendary Aisha Prodigy also on the phone line with us. We have Fuzzy Prodigy on the phone with us. We have the legendary Aisha Prodigy. We have Martha from Reach LA is on the phone. And we have Dr. Michelle is definitely on the phone. So first, can we please welcome Dr. Martha to the show? Michelle to the show. And next.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle. Next week,
I'm doing fine, and yourself. Next week, welcome.
The Icon Jay Manola Blahnik to the show.
What's up, sis? How are you?
Hey, Jay. I'm doing fine, and yourself.
It was great seeing you last time. Looking lovely as ever.
Yes, I'm doing fine. Next, we're going to welcome the Icon Jack Mizrahi to the show. Hey, Jack.
Hi, everybody.
No, we can't hear you. We can't hear Jack, honey. Hold on. We're going to try to get Jack back on the line. But next, we're going to welcome Martha and Aisha Prodigy to the phone line. Hey.
Hi, Kelly. How are you doing? How's everybody doing today? It's Aisha.
Hold on. Hey.
Hi. This is Martha.
Hold on, y'all. I'm trying to get Jack back on the phone. Click over to your line. Hello, Jack, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Hello, Jay, Martha, Aisha.
Hey, Jack.
Michelle. Okay, Jack is on the line now.
Okay.
So go ahead, guys. I'm going to sit here with y'all. I'm going to take phone calls. I'm going to listen. I'm going to be here with y'all. But the floor is definitely all yours.
Can everybody hear me? This is Aisha.
Yes, Aisha, I got you. I hear you.
Everybody hears me loud and clear?
Yep.
Because I have a lot of questions I want to ask today about Be the Generation. My first question, I think before we even start about Be the Generation, can each of you tell us a little bit about yourself, Jack, Jay, then Michelle, and then I'm going to start with the questions about Be the Generation. So, Jack, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Myself?
That's you, Jack.
Hi, everybody. This is Jack Mizrahi. I've been in the scene for the past 2 decades. Definitely enjoying what I do as a commentator and a force and a leader in the scene. I've been so fortunate to have this opportunity to create this Jack Mizrahi persona and be able to translate a different side of me all across the ballroom world, across the world now, and it's been really good for me. So I definitely love being able to use my persona to aid in the Beba Generation goals.
Thank you, Jack. Jay?
You're welcome. Well, hello, everyone. This is Jay Blonick. Like Jack, I've been a part of the ball scene for about 2 decades now. I get a chance to be a part of Be the Generation on multiple fronts. I mean, as a member of the outreach team that to work with all the balls to help kind of put together the performances, I had a chance to be up close and in person with all of you all across the country in the ball scene. And from the management side of the project, I was once the project director. So it was a really good opportunity for you guys for all of us to come together and really do some really great work for you.
Thank you so much, Jay. And Dr. Michelle?
Hi. My name is Michelle Andrasik, and I am a clinical health psychologist. I work for the University of Washington, the Center for AIDS Research in Seattle, and for the HIV Vaccine Trials Network, which is part of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. I've been working in Black and Latino communities since the early 90s, working with HIV. I started out as a community-based organization called Community Counseling and Mediation, and transformed into a psychologist, and have just been working to address determinants of health in Black and Latino communities focusing on HIV.
Thank you, Michelle. So we have a wealth of information on the phone right now. So yesterday I had the pleasure of attending the Vampire Ball, and I got to see the Be the Generation skit and LSS commentation. I saw those wonderful red shirts. I saw BTG. But this is a layman. As one, each person to kind of answer the question, what is the Be the Generation Bridge Project? Tell me more about it. Just kind of like explain it in a nutshell for me so that everybody can understand what your goal is and what Be the Generation is about.
So I will go first. I will tell you that the Be the Generation Project was funded by a division of the National Institutes of Health. And the name of that bureau is the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. And they funded two entities. One was FHI 360 out of Washington, D.C., and the other entity was the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, where both Michelle and I worked, more specifically funding the Legacy Project, where I served as the director. The purpose of the project was really was threefold, I would say. One was to increase scientific literacy among disproportionately indolations, Black and Latino folks, gay folks, youth. One of the other aims of the project was really to share some of the research that was coming out of the 6 clinical HIV research networks. And the third was really to translate that information in ways that community members can really understand it. And how we did that is that we funded partners all over the country, which REACH-LA was the funded partner. And under the REACH-LA umbrella, there was another partnership with the House of Garcon, the House of Blonick, and with several other key influential members of our community. Deshaun and Jack were two of the most influential folks we brought on board with the project.
Anybody, Jack, you want to jump in? Jack? Did we lose Jack? Michelle?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. I think I got kicked off for a little bit. I'm sorry.
You didn't lose Jack. Jack is trying to fix this sound. If you have any questions about losing anybody, just ask me and I'll just come on and I'll let you know. But Jack is trying to fix this sound.
All right. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay.
So I didn't quite hear what Damon had said, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be repeating that or not, but my connection with Be the Generation is really to help translate some of the science of some of the biomedical interventions like pre-exposure prophylaxis, the vaccine trials, microbicides, into language that everyone can understand so that we can all, you know, talk about it in a way that makes sense to everyone, because often scientists don't have the skills to relay information in a way that makes it easily comprehensible. So I've been working with the Be the Generation project on that.
Okay, I guess then my next question for you, Michelle, would be to explain what is biomedical, first first thing, and what is PrEP, PEP, and some of the things that go into biomedical and microbicides, because these are kind of like the next wave of what prevention is looking like. So what is biomedical, what is PrEP, what is PEP, and what are microbicide trials looking like now?
Okay. The easiest way to describe biomedical is really, you know, so anything that's sort of been created by man to attack diseases or illness. And so within the world of HIV, we have several networks that do research to try to find the best way to prevent HIV. And one of those networks, the AIDS Clinical Trials Group, is the network that sort of looks at HIV medications for folks who are already HIV positive. And some of those HIV medications we have found through clinical trials that have been conducted by other groups like the HIV Prevention Treatment Network, that medications that can be used with people who are HIV positive to slow down their illness or to increase their viral load and to attack HIV can also be used as a means to prevent HIV. So PEP, which is an acronym for post-exposure prophylaxis, has been used quite a bit. And it's generally used by people in the medical industry who might get a needle stick or somehow get exposed to blood that has the HIV virus in it. And so PEP is something you take after you've been exposed as a way to prevent HIV seroconversion. And seroconversion is another way of saying that you convert from being HIV negative to HIV positive, and it's called seroconversion because sero is blood, and you find out that you've converted from HIV negative to HIV positive through a blood test, so seroconversion. So that's PEP. And PEP in recent years has also been used quite a bit by the gay male community or men who have sex with men who may not identify as gay, who know that they have been exposed to HIV and then, you know, have gone into generally, you know, medical facilities to get PEP. So that's PEP. But, you know, that is not a widely considered HIV prevention technique because you've already been exposed. So PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. And what PrEP is using those same HIV meds, which are called antiretroviral therapies, or ART for short, several clinical trials have shown that if you take one specific drug, Truvada, and you take it every day religiously, there's got to be very high adherence. As someone who's HIV negative, it can effectively reduce your likelihood of becoming HIV infected if you do in fact come in contact with the HIV virus. I have to underscore, though, very important, it has to be taken every day. Adherence is critical. So, you know, if the person who decides to take PrEP as an HIV prevention technique needs to really make sure that they can take something religiously every day when, you know, they're not ill or anything. So you can think about how well you take vitamins, for example, when you're not sick, and that would probably give you some sort of indication as to how well you would do on PrEP.
Yeah.
And then microbicides are HIV prevention gels that are being tested by the Microbicide Trials Network. And basically what microbicides are is they take these antiretroviral therapies as well. You know, most of them have used Truvada again, and they put them in a gel that's kind of like lube. More recently, they're developing a ring something that you can insert into the vagina or insert into your rectum, and it releases the Truvada. And so when, you know, it comes in contact with HIV virus, you know, it can effectively prevent HIV infection. The other thing about microbicides, though, which I cannot underscore enough, is that you have to use them for them to be effective. And one of the things that has been a real issue in some of the research is that people don't use them consistently. So, you know, when you talk about people using things, often in the scientific literature, you'll hear that referred to as adherence. So are they adhering to what they need to do to have the maximum level of protection? And if you're not using the gel, you know, before sexual activity, you know, at least 12 hours before sexual activity. So obviously it takes a lot of planning. You know, if you don't know you're going to have sexual encounters, then, you know, it's kind of hard to plan for that. But you have to be pretty diligent about using it for it to work. So, and the other thing that I should mention, since we're talking about some of the prevention efforts, is that they've also found with couples that are serodiscordant. So serodiscordant is just a fancy way of saying that you're in a relationship, one partner is HIV positive, the other partner is HIV negative, and what we've found is that if the HIV positive partner is taking meds and taking them, you know, the way that they're supposed to be taking them, they can significantly reduce their viral load and increase their T cells, and as a result, they're less infectious to their partner. So you have less of a chance of passing HIV onto your partner. So, again, you know, all of this stuff is called treatment as prevention. So using HIV drugs that have been developed for people who are HIV positive to control their control the HIV and improve, you know, their immune response to HIV, these drugs are now being used for prevention, which is, you know, one of the biggest achievements I would say that we've had in HIV for a long time after many years of not really seeing too much that worked in the way of prevention. In the last couple years, we've seen a few things that have really worked, the issue is you have to take them for them to work.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Wow, what just so much information. I know so much information, and I know that Martha is going to make sure that the information is on the BTG page as well as the Reach LA page. If you have any other, if you want to ask any more other any questions or find out more about PrEP, PEP, and microbicides as well as treatment as prevention. So I want to go back to Jack. Is Jack back on, Kelly? Jack? Hello? Okay. Is Jay back on? Hello?
Yes, I'm here, Aisha.
Jay, you're here. Okay.
Jay is there. I don't know what's going. Jay is there. I don't know what's going on with Jack's phone. He keeps saying hello, but and y'all can't hear him.
Oh Lord, sure. Jack needs. So somebody's to call Jack on 3-way or something. So my question is: so tell me about the BTG Borum Community Outreach Team. Who are the team members? What does the team do? And just kind of explain it a little bit more about Be the Generation.
So essentially the team was comprised of several influential people in the ballroom community. There's Jack Mizrahi, there's Tony Garcon, Malachi Garcon, Deshaun Ibisu Lavin, Fuzzy Blonick, and Shannon Garcon, and Michael Garcon really served as the entire team. And collectively with an evaluator, we really used the runway as a means of really educating our own community. We really thought that people go to balls to really experience the performance of it all, the showmanship, the competition. And so we wanted to take a glimpse of some of the highlights of what goes on at a ball, use that as a vehicle by which we teach our peers, and I think we've been really successful at doing it. I think people really caught on to the message behind Be the Generation.
So I guess the next question.
Aisha, you have Jack back.
Oh, hi, Jack. Hello, Jack. Jack.
Yes, of course. Hello.
Jack,
hello.
Are you back?
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Back. Jack, give me some examples of some things the Be the Generation has done, some events that you guys have done, some of the mechanisms that you guys have used to get the Be the Generation message out. So, just like some examples have happened from, I know it happens state to state. So kind of like, let us know what some of the things you've done.
Oh, and I don't want to forget it. So
basically this whole experience has been awesome. I think it's really been innovative. Within the group itself, it forced us to be able to work with each other, talk to each other, and come into common ground on how we should get the message out. And in the way that we did. So that was really the best part, really a great part of the experience. And we first debuted last year at the Capitol Awards Ball. And I think the mechanism that everybody really noticed that night was the fact that not only did my legs look great in those shorts,
they did look sexy.
They did. I had lost 15 pounds. But anyway, the fact that we all came in there, and what the ballroom community likes, and I think it's not just the ballroom community, I think any group, whenever you see some people in uniform, and you start to wonder, well, what were these fees about? What were these shirts about? And just walking around the room, even before we even performed, to be stopped and asked, well, why didn't I get a shirt? And what's this about? What's going to happen? I think that really quick got everybody's attention. And I think, just everybody being in the spirit to really want to teach, because to me, the important thing was this was a different way of getting a message out, to letting people know that there was something out there that can really, really change your life and help you in the manner that you need to be helped in what's going on in the world today, and how these rates, the HIV rate is just going. It's just going up constantly, even with our youngest kids. So to put the information out in a way that people wouldn't feel that they were dumbed down by the big words. They felt that they can ask questions and hear it from their peers, and be able to go see for themselves if this was something that they wanted to try for themselves. And I think that's what made it so unique. So going from, to all the balls in Capitol Awards Ball, we also performed at the Candy World Ball. We did the Overness Ball, as well as the last one was the Rumble last night. And it was just seeing just all the talent in the scene together, working together just into a common goal.
So two-part question for Jay and Jack. What is it that made you want to be a part of this, the Be The Generation, what kind of like, what were some of the, you know, I guess kind of things that influenced you to want to do this for the community? I know you guys have kind of touched on it, but tell us more why you're doing this, why you're taking time out of your time to kind of educate the community on next steps and prevention mechanisms.
I can say for me personally, I'm just tired of seeing a lot of our own kids, some of the people sitting in silence, people that, you know, are so afraid to tell you what's going on with themselves only because they don't want that information to be turned into ammunition against them later. I got tired of seeing my own kids and my own friends not knowing what's out there because they're afraid to ask. They're afraid to walk into an agency and get the proper information. So I figure by putting myself in the center of something like this and getting the chance, of course, to work with Jay and Michael Roberson, who I just think is just such an angel when it comes to the scene. With everything that he tries to do in this field for the scene, is just absolutely amazing to me. So when approached about collaborating, it was just, I mean, it made perfect sense. It was like, let's get this message out there and let's see how much help we can actually give out.
Thank you so much, Jack. And Jay?
You know, I echo everything that Jack said, obviously, because I think he's right on point in terms of, you know, just underscoring the necessity for us to kind of level the playing field around what we know and what we don't know. But for me, it was also a different reason. When I do a lot of work with the Clinical Trials Network, what I realized early on is that the people who actually were tested in the trial, who participated in the trial, didn't look like us, meaning that they weren't black, they weren't Latino, they weren't necessarily all gay unless it was the IPERC study, which was targeting specifically gay men. And even that didn't have the black and Latino representation in it. And if any of these strategies, biomedical interventions, is going to work, it's got to work in every population, every single group of people. And we won't know that until you have the adequate participation of that group trials. And so I didn't want my community going out, you know, participating in trials or signing up for stuff without really being informed. And so I thought it was important for us, this team, to take a step back to think about how can we really, really empower our community with the information necessary so they can make an informed decision about their own participation in the HIV clinical trial. And if they would like to proceed forward and be a part of that trial, then they'd be doing it from a place of knowing and not a place of kind of being bamboozled or just a number. And so that was really, really important to me. And then the ultimate goal is that each of those interventions would then have the representation from people that look like us, and we can say that these interventions now work for us. And we don't have to doubt, we don't have to guess about these things. We know for sure that our people participated, therefore we know. And that was really, really important to me.
Thank you so much, Jay. That's very true. So,
can I just stress something about that? So currently what we're seeing in HIV is that among all people, the HIV meds that we have right now are least effective in black folks.
Wow.
You know, and if you look at the history of black individuals participating in research, you know, we as a community have had, you know, many things that have transpired in research that have crossed ethical lines. And as a result, there have been so many more stringent requirements with regard to how scientists engage humans in research to make sure that everyone is protected and safety is the first issue and there is no, you know, discrimination. So I think it's imperative for all of us to get involved, particularly with how disproportionately we are impacted, especially our young black boys who, you know, continue to increase in terms of the rates of new infections. And over the past 10 years, HIV has been in the top 10, actually it's been like 15 years now, HIV has been in the top 10 leading causes of death for black men and women age 35 to 54. So we as a people need to be involved in these trials so that when something does get discovered, like a vaccine or a cure, we know that it's going to work for us and it's going to work well for us, and we're not going to be seeing what we see now, which is some of these HIV meds aren't working as well for black people, and we're not really sure why.
Thanks, Michelle, for that, because, you know, it's really, really, like, working in the prevention field myself, I've seen a lot of deaths happen with young adults, and it's really, really kind of coming close to home.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know that there's a shift from HIV prevention. So what's going on in the climate? What's happening with the HIV prevention environment? This is for you and Jay. What's coming up next? Because I know it's high-impact prevention, and how are we kind of targeting? What are some of the things that are happening now? What's going on in the environment? What's going on with prevention? Because I know prevention is treatment, you know.
Yep.
And answer that even more so than I can.
Yeah. Well, not only is prevention treatment, but now everybody is talking about cascade of care. So what that means is that every state and local entity is going to really be charged with making sure that people are tested and they know their status, because there are still a lot of people out in the community who don't know their HIV status and they haven't been tested. So that's number one, to get people tested. And once you get people tested, to really make sure that if someone tests positive, you get them into care and you get them on treatment. You know, for those of us who've been in HIV care forever, you know, I remember a time where it was like, well, we're not going to put you on meds until your CD4 count is this much or until your viral load is this much. But now, you know, the general sense is that if someone's positive, you get their viral load undetected, you put them on medications, because not only does it protect the person who is who's tested positive by keeping their immune system healthy, but when you suppress the virus or control the virus in someone who's positive, so, you know, it's like a lot of people talk about their viral load is undetectable. Well, it's not really undetectable. The virus is still there, but what that really means is that it's not wreaking havoc on the person's body, and just as important, the likelihood of them transmitting the virus to someone else is much lower because their virus is under control. So that's the other thing, making sure that people are on medication and they're being maintained on medication. So that's really what you're going to hear a lot of, because it has really huge implications for community viral load, which is just a fancy way of saying if you have a lot of people in your community or in your sexual network who don't have the virus under control through medication or, you know, through practicing safer sex, then, you know, the chances of HIV transmitting in your community and transmitting at a faster rate goes up. So it's really important that we keep community viral load down.
Aisha?
Yes?
I got a text message on my red phone. And
okay.
They said that everybody introduce themselves but yourself.
But me?
Yes.
What red phone was that?
That's the red phone.
It wasn't me texting, was it?
No, that's the red phone with all the cards.
It might have been my phone. Well, my name is Aisha Diori. I'm also Legendary Woman's Face, Aisha Prodigy. I've been working in HIV prevention for going on about 15, going on 16 years. I was one when I started, so I'm really 17 years old now. So don't try and guess my age. I got into HIV prevention work because I was really, first of all, I got into it because I became a part of the House of Latex Project, which was doing prevention within the house ballroom scene. And, of course, the house ballroom scene excited me. The first time I stepped in there, I have never left. I'm still involved in it. And I continue to do the work and continue to work with youth and young adults, as well as, you know, from time to time hit the floor. I'm not a kitten like I used to be because I'm 17 now. So I don't hit the floor as much as I used to, but I'm still out here trying to make sure that we get the message out there. It's really, really scary to me that we're losing people at such young ages and that people are not getting connected to care. And one of my things for this year is to really tell everybody and really kind of beg everybody to get connected to care, whether it be HIV preventative care, STI preventative care, or just even for, like, making sure that your cholesterol level is fine, making sure that your health as a whole is fine, because you know what? We have only ourselves, so we have to love ourselves enough to take care of ourselves. So really arming yourself with tools to take care of yourself. I'm not yucking anybody's yum. You could have as much sex as you want, but just do it. Protect yourself and make sure you have the right tools to make sure you keep safe and you stay safe. Is that enough, Kelly?
Yes.
So I kind of want to, before we take questions from the audience, I wanted to kind of get a take-home message from everybody regarding.
Actually, before we go to take-home, can I respond to your last question? I think there's two other things I'd like for folks to kind of be conscious of. One is that I think we have to pay attention to the state of the economy, right? You know, we just had a sequestration occur, and I don't know if people know what a sequestration is, but it's when government gives a singular cut across the board for every federal agency. So it could be CDC, it doesn't matter. And so the purpose of the sequestration was really to lower the national debt, right? But there are programs and services that are at risk each time that our government chooses to make a decision such as a sequestration. And so the current one that we're in, it's supposed to save us $1.1 trillion. It's from 2013 to 2021. It's an eight-year period, saving us about $85.5 billion a year. But herein lies the problem. If the cornerstone of how black and brown people receive services are socially, which means they take place in the context of a community-based organization, and we're cutting funds, most likely those are the type programs and services that get reduced first. And so as HIV is moving, and Michelle talked a little bit about this, but as HIV is becoming medicalized, which means that you'll find those services now in clinics and federally qualified health centers, not so much in the community-based organizations. And so that changes the entire landscape in terms of how we receive services, how we're able to treat ourselves, and how we're able to receive the kind of care, both medical care, but also supportive services that will help us maintain a lower viral load and high CD4. And I think that we don't think enough about what the state of the economy is and how that really hinders and damages our ability to kind of provide the services that are most necessary. And then the last thing I will really say is coming down the pike is Michelle talked a lot about treatment as prevention. And I think that we have to really talk about how treatment as prevention really, really saves lives. And so, you know, when you think about people who are HIV positive, who are taking their medication, who have an undetectable viral load, they become less infectious, which means that they don't pass the virus on as readily as they would have without those medications and treatments. And so treatment as prevention is going to lead the pack in terms of, in my opinion, is going to lead the pack in terms of how we respond to HIV unless we have a vaccine, which is where Michelle works at the HIV Vaccine Trials Network. If a vaccine becomes available, then that's the most cost-effective approach. But I want folks to really understand why it's important, kind of think about what Jack said about not stigmatizing people with HIV and really encouraging folks to seek that kind of treatment because it really helps us all out in the community.
Thanks a lot, Jay. Before we go to the callers, because I have some questions for callers, if anybody wants, has anybody called in with questions, I kind of wanted to ask each person on the phone to kind of give us a take-home message regarding treatment as prevention, as well as, you know, PrEP, PEP, bricobicides, the vaccine. What are some take-home messages? What are some things that you want us to take back to our houses, to our community, to our friends, to the ballroom scene? Because you know what? This is the ballroom. This is a ballroom. We're talking about the ballroom scene, which is a highly impacted community with HIV and AIDS. So we want to think about what are some of our messages as leaders and community leaders, as doctors. What are some messages you want the community
Aisha,
to have?
Aisha, let me stop you. You're going to closing remarks, Aisha, and you still got a slew of callers.
I'm not closing with the callers. I'm just wanting to give a little message, and then we're going to take phone calls and conversations.
Save that until the end.
Oh, here we go. Excuse me, Kelly.
Okay. So I'm going to start with your list of callers that you have.
All right. So go ahead.
Bryant, you're live on the air.
Hey, how you doing, everybody?
Hey.
And I don't mind because I've done it before. Me as an HIV positive male. Like you were talking earlier, and you kind of confirmed something. Me and my partner, I'm positive, he's negative, and that you were saying, like, and as my doctor has told me, that once that, I mean, because I'm undetectable, and we do have sex, and, you know, I have had some friends question me, well, would y'all use, you know, condoms, da 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 da. I'm like, sometimes, yeah, but, and, you know, I was trying to see, you know, what, and to read you, like I said, you have reassured me of, you know, once, you know, we do protect ourselves. We don't ejaculate in each other or anything of that nature, but we do have sex protectively sometimes, and that, you know, I have a T-cells of like 980 and I'm undetectable, but, you know, is that okay or?
That's an excellent question. Thank you for calling in and sharing. Dr. Michelle? Jay or Dr. Michelle, could you answer the question?
You know, I would say that, you know, I don't want to cast judgment and say whether it's okay or not okay. What I would say is that because you have an undetectable viral load does not mean you're uninfectious, which means you still have virus in your DNA and there's still a possibility that you can transmit the virus to your partner. And so, you know, I would encourage you as much as possible to still use condoms and to still think about the fact that because you're less infectious, it doesn't mean zero infection. But again, I would concur with Aisha. I really appreciate the steps you have taken with you and your partner to really keep each other safe. And I think I really appreciate your honesty in calling in.
And also it could be you could actually talk to your doctor. Maybe your partner might be interested in getting on PrEP. Since you guys are engaging in unprotected sex, then maybe he can put that into his regimen, and then that could be a protection mechanism you can use as well.
You know, one thing that I would add to the mix is that when people decide to engage in unprotected sex, there's another person or demon that's in the mix of this, right? And that's STIs. And so the presence of an STI really increases the likelihood and the probability of HIV transmission to occur. And so when you think about it in a bowl, for example, if you have more suds in the bowl, people think they're getting cleaner, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that. It depends on what's in the bowl again. And so I want people to think about when STDs are there, it means that there's a likelihood of HIV, or if there is some abrasion to the rectal wall or the urethra, which is the canal that your semen travels through, that in and of itself, that's a mucosal membrane. And that there could be scalp cells present there, which is the cell that's necessary to bring HIV into your body. So I would ask you to think about, and that's not just you, anybody who's out there having sex, think about, you know, not only getting tested for HIV, but to look at your entire sexual health and get tested for STIs, and not just in the places where we think are our sexual organs, but think about our throats and mouths where we have oral sex. Think about using having an anal pap smear done. I mean, those things are all critically important to all of our overall health and wellness.
Thank you so much, Jay. Kelly?
Okay, the next caller is 347-399. You're live on the air. 347-399, you're live on the air. Okay, I guess not. Thank you for listening. The next caller is 917-617. You're live on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi. Just a quick question that I would like to piggyback on TAP that wasn't mentioned. Is that there's a 72-hour window period that you have to start treatment. It's not as effective. And that was,
right.
That wasn't mentioned. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. That's an excellent point.
Okay. Thank you, caller. The next caller we have is Bishop. You're live on the air.
Yes. I just want to know if this is a myth or legend. Is Dr. Michelle still on the phone?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. I'm here.
I want to know if this is a myth or legend. Any of you guys can answer this question. Is it true that when you do come in contact with HIV, I was told by a friend that has HIV that your T cells are found out and they ask you whether you need medication or whether or not you need medication. Once you get on that medication, are your T cells much more stronger than any human that doesn't have HIV? Is that a myth or a legend?
That would be a myth because T cells are T cells, and basically they are cells in your immune system that are there to fight infection. And what HIV medications do is they prevent HIV. So what HIV does, why HIV is such a difficult virus, is that HIV gets into your immune system and it basically tricks the cells in your immune system into thinking that they should play on HIV's team, you know. So your cells are supposed to be fighting HIV, and what ends up happening is that HIV sort of invades the cell, takes them over, and makes them more of, you know, HIV, and that's a very sort of simple way to explain it, but that's really what's going on. So what these antiretroviral therapies do, well, really they do a bunch of things, but basically they're strengthening the T cells so that they can recognize HIV and won't be tricked by HIV so that they can continue to fight against the virus. So does it make you stronger than other people's cells? No, but what it does is teach your cells not to be tricked by HIV, you know, which is really what they need to be doing. So in that respect, it is sort of letting them know, hey, you know, we have an intruder in the house. We need to make sure that, you know, we keep it in check. But it's not making your cells any stronger, I would say.
Okay.
And anybody else can feel free to, go ahead.
That's what I wanted to ask. Maybe I was saying it wrong, but, you know, they told me that with them on their medication, it literally makes them like much more like from a, you know, a different person that doesn't have HIV. Or a person that doesn't contract any type of STI, it makes them much more healthier than the next person.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's true. I mean, a lot of my close personal friends and, you know, people who I've worked with over the last 20 years who have been on HIV meds, I think many of them will tell you that it is not a walk in the park. Many times there are side effects. You know, just like any other medication, and I would say that probably 98% of the people that I know who are on HIV meds would not consider them as making them like better than other folks, which I guess is what your friends are sort of saying to you, but it does keep them healthy. If that's what they're saying, yes. I mean, they're really, really effective at keeping people healthy and keeping HIV at bay.
Thank you, Bishop. Definitely calling in, Bishop.
Not a problem.
Okay. The next caller we have on is Susan Mizrahi. And before you start speaking, Susan, I would like to wish you a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Susan.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I have a question for Jack, Jay, and Dr. Michelle. For Jack, I wanted to know, have you had any impediments or anything in the way of the unity, getting unity in the ballroom community as far as getting information out and getting people to participate and just be happy about you all, be the generation being around? For Jay, I wanted to know, the House of Blinding, what is your involvement in with the Be the Generation? Is it connected? And for Dr. Michelle, I wanted to know, what is the is there a disparity as far as information, funding, and treatment for women affected and infected with HIV? That's it.
Great question, Susan.
Jack. Happy birthday, Susan.
Thank you, Jack.
As far as the community, I think it was pretty well received. There was no, I think everybody was inclined to know what was going on. And so it was received very well. I think the information, as long as you can communicate the information properly, I think our community will listen because we are aware of what's happening. The youth is very, very well aware, which is one of the best things that I find surprisingly about the Kiki scene is how much information that they know, because actually they were kind of raised up in it. Whereas the people who were before me or around my time, it happened around them. And for the most part, they were shunned from that. Well, not really shunned, but they were they didn't have that information made available to them until, JMAC started with the House Ballroom Study. So now I think any information that we get and that we can pass on to our kids, it's always welcoming. And then it's up to them to decide, how they disperse it among their people and where they go from there. But everybody was definitely supportive.
Jay?
Yeah, I would just add to what Jack said, because I concur for the most part. I think there's a degree, though, of HIV fatigue in our community. I think that sometimes we just really get tired of hearing as gay men and transgender persons about HIV as if there is no other health concern that really we have to contend with. So I feel like, in part, they were really receptive to the project because of people like Jack and Tony and Malachi and the rest of the team. But I do think overall there's a fatigue around HIV and wanting to learn more, hear more about it, and have those kind of open, candid discussions like we're having tonight. Your question that was directly to me, which was about House of Blinds involvement, is that we were involved in the same way that all the other team members were involved. We really participated in the development of some of the educational material. I actually led the training for the team around all of the biomedical research approaches. And I think that collectively the House of Blonix, post my involvement and Fuzzy's involvement, have really just been supportive of this initiative and other initiatives that we have funded through Be the Generation.
Thanks, Jay.
Dr. Michelle?
Yeah, so I'm really glad you brought up the issue of women. Several colleagues of mine and I just wrote an article on the need to focus more money on women's issues. We know that HIV is a real issue, particularly for women of color. We also know that there are several social and structural determinants that impact someone's likelihood of being HIV infected as a woman, and one of those is violence, whether it's intimate partner violence or generally it's intimate partner violence, which used to be known as domestic violence, and now people refer to it as intimate partner violence. But, there is a real issue for women, and particularly black women. I mean, we have some of the highest mortality rates of anyone with HIV, which means that once we get HIV, we're much more likely to die from it. So, yes, I completely agree with you. We need more money directed at women's issues. But as Jay was saying before, very well, we are in tough financial times, and so I...
Hello? I think we lost Michelle.
I think so. Hold on. Let me look at my board.
There was
Michelle?
A question, Kelly. I wanted to, there was a question that Marcus, based in the group, about if PrEP and if PrEP or PEP is covered by insurance. And I think Jay
actually
answered.
Responded to
Go
that
ahead.
Too. And I basically said yes. I mean, your insurance company should cover the cost of PrEP if you're interested in taking it. PrEP is really designed, though, and I must be honest with folks. When the FDA, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. When the
FDA approves PrEP, they approve PrEP for what they consider to be high-risk populations. And so what that means are people in serodiscordant relationships, and as Michelle said, that just means the person who's HIV positive having a partner who's HIV negative, or persons who engage in commercial sex work or something of that sort. But there's a loophole if your insurance will not cover Gilead, and they don't promote this, guys, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Gilead, which is the manufacturer of Truvada, which is the primary drug used in PrEP, does have discretionary resources to support people if you are interested in the drug and you don't have insurance for it. So you can reach out to Gilead directly, and they will then set you up with the drugs and the monitoring necessary for you to be healthy while on the medication.
Thank you, Jay.
Hello, am I on?
Yes, Michelle, you're
back.
Yeah,
you're back.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not sure when I cut off. I just all of a sudden had dead air.
Yeah, you're back. I called you directly from the show board.
Oh, okay.
So I guess we can go to the next question, Kelly.
Okay. Thank you, Susan, for definitely calling in. The next caller we have is 347-949. You're live on the air.
Hi, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
This is Johnny Guadupo. I'm based in New York City. I work for Housing Works in East New York.
Hi,
I'm
Johnny.
I'm with the Global Access Project. I'm back with the information that was given. I was a little more concerned around, I'm hearing a lot more about B Project than the B Generation. And I have a few questions. As far as the timeline for this project, it seems like first it's more of marketing and making people aware, like the community board team, aware of who we are or who you guys are and what you guys are going to do, mission, vision. But one of the things I didn't hear and I was interested in hearing probably from Dr. Michelle was more around substance use. And how that also plays around folks with an undetectable viral load, folks getting into PrEP, and how comfortable probably some of the community members feel as far as whether they get infected with HIV or not because of some of these new advances. Also, I was interested in knowing more around when someone's infected and they have that 72-hour period, where can they go to actually get that medication? I know in New York City it's been a little tough, even though we advocate and we inform people to go to emergency rooms. It's not as easy as it sounds and as they have told us. So I was just interested as far as, like, what other cities, you know, what policies they have, what's the timeline for B Generation, what are they going to do as far as informing the community about community viral load, IPrep, PrEP, you know, microbicides, those kind, that kind of information in the language that they're going to be able to understand.
Oh, wow. John, you have like four questions. We're going to go one at a time. First question was, B the Generation, what's the timeline? Is it what's going? Is it still going to be continuing? That's the question I'm going to to Jay Martha. You want to answer the question regarding about that and Jack, and then we'll go to the next question from there.
So at this time, my understanding is that the Be The Generation project will not continue in its current state, and there will be discussion at the federal level to determine if there will be another awareness-based project that will do some of the same work as Be The Generation in some other form or model. But at this current time, Be The Generation will end at the end of this year, December 31st.
Thank you, Jay. However, this is Martha from Reach LA. We'll be manning the BTG, Be The Generation, Ballroom Community Outreach Facebook page. So if you have questions, I'll be posting all the different clinical trials and outcomes of those trials. If you have questions, I'll refer you to other folks in your area that we can help you with. And so we're going to maintain a presence online that way.
Mm-hmm. And the next question, which was a really great question, was drug use and its kind of interaction with PrEP, PEP, and other, and also HIV medications. Michelle, could you answer that?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to Housing Works from New York City, and you guys do awesome work, so thank you. And I also wanted to say, you know, there are a lot of misperceptions about substance users and, you know, talking about stigma, substance users get, you know, the lion's share of stigma. And, you know, I have to say that anyone, regardless of whether they're using drugs, should really talk to, you know, a medical provider or, you know, someone that they trust who's a health professional about, you know, whether or not they can take the take, you know, some of these medications for prevention. You know, there have been a lot of studies that have shown to the larger scientific community that, you know, people who are using drugs, whether they're dependent on drugs or addicted to drugs, can still, you know, follow a medication regimen and, you know, can be adherent to the meds, which is really what is most important. You know, now, obviously, if someone is in a situation where they can't keep track of their meds, aren't going to be able to take their meds every day, then that person might not be a good candidate to put on these medications. But I would argue that you should not take a huge brush and just, you know, say across the board that just because someone's using drugs, whether legal or illegal, that they should be, you know, excluded from these trials, you know. And speaking of legal versus illegal drugs, there are a lot of people who are taking prescription medications who, you know, of course, if you start any other medication, you need to talk about the interactions of these drugs. So I think it's the same whether you're taking prescription drugs or illicit drugs. Just, you know, talk to your health provider about what that means for you and whether there are any indications that taking these two drugs together might not be a good idea.
Michelle, I kind of want to jump in on this question. The next, mm-hmm. What about people that are doing hormone therapy, steroids, pumping, you know, mm-hmm. like that too? Are there any interactions between those sharing, people that are sharing needles and things like that? Any interactions that you could kind of talk about in
mm-hmm.
those terms?
Well, my first reaction would be like under no circumstances should you be sharing needles. Unless you are cleaning them really, really well, but there are ways that you can get clean needles in almost everywhere in this country. I think now even D.C., which was staunch against needle exchange, now has a needle exchange program. So I would say don't share needles if you can avoid it at all. But what's really I think a disservice to folks who are on hormone therapy is that we have not done really good studies to look at interactions with hormones or injectables, Botox, you know. So there has not been a long-term study that has really looked at that. Even for folks who are on hormone therapies and taking antiretroviral therapies, I am not aware of any long-term studies that really looks at that. So that's one of the things that we've been advocating for. We have a transgender working group at the HIV Vaccine Trials Network, and we've been advocating for some ancillary studies, which basically is a fancy way of saying a study that we tack on to something else, where we could look at the long-term effects of hormone therapy with some of these other vaccine products. But, you know.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Sorry, just one more question.
Johnny had another question regarding when can people get the medication for, if you do have that 72-hour window period. He talked about having it, you can get it in emergency rooms, but it's not easy. So how can someone, if they are, they feel like they've gotten infected, if they feel like they've been at risk or might be infected or, and want to get onto PEP, right? It's PEP. Onto PEP, how can they get their hand on PEP in this disease as well as New York City?
Yeah.
There is no one shop place that we can refer everyone. I would say to folks that, you know, I would first go to your healthcare provider in your local community. And the second is, like I said before, if you're really looking for PEP and you don't have insurance, the place that I would go next is to directly to Gilead. And they don't promote this stuff, guys. I said this before. But they will see people on an as-needed basis. And the last thing I would say, just to Michelle's point about hormonal therapy interactions with hormones and some of the stuff that we're doing in the trials, is that we, in Legacy Project, held a transgender consultation. And one of the things that the Microbicides Trials Network really talked about was the need to ensure that moving forward that their microbicides would look at any interaction between people's hormonal therapies and the actual drug or the agent actually used in the formulation of the microbicide.
Thank you so much, Jen, Doctor. Kelly, any more questions? Any more callers? Kelly?
Yes, hold on, Aisha. Hold on, honey. Hold on. The next caller is, hold on, we have another caller. The next caller is the icon, Andre Mizrahi.
Ooh, hi, Andre.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how's they doing?
Fine, and you?
I'm good. I just wanted to come up here and say, you know, I'm one of those that have been following HIV for a long time. I'm negative, but for us to have people like y'all, the whole B generation, is a miracle for everybody, because everybody needs people like y'all or people like us to help guide any kind of, you know, youth individuals, and it not only goes to youth, it just goes to people in general, because at the end of the day, we all need love, regardless if you are HIV, if you're not, and we all have kids to try to make a way, a better way for life for them. So I just wanted to come up here and just say thank y'all for even having this today, period.
Oh, thank you so much, Andre.
You all right?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Andre. You're welcome.
The next caller we have is 978-931.
Hello, everyone. Hello.
Stefan. I know that voice anywhere.
Yep.
Hey.
Hi, Stefan.
What's going on, everyone? Hey. Hey, Kelly. Hey, Jack. Martha.
Hey.
Hi. Jay. I just wanted to come and give my support, and I also wanted to sort of talk about, Michelle, are you still on the call?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Stefan.
Okay. Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to go a little bit further to a comment that Jay made a moment ago about Be the Generation, and I know we've been having a lot of conversation internally. For those who don't know, I'm a project manager with the Legacy Project that Jay mentioned earlier. And here at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center with Michelle and Drastic. And so we've been having some conversations internally around how to continue certain elements of the Beta Generation project post December 31st, because there is a need to have this particular project going. And so obviously the issue is always around resources, but we've been having a lot of conversations around how to continue this. So hopefully something comes out of those conversations. I'm definitely advocating that we continue some aspects of the Be the Generation project going forward. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
Thank you.
You know, this is my little pitch right here, and I'm sure that you've heard me on my soapbox a billion times. But I think this is a time for community to really hear the importance of us taking care of ourselves. We cannot sit here and be idle and continue to wait for government to solve all of our problems. We can't sit here and be idle and wait for government to fund the very initiatives that really help to save lives, to advance our own education or knowledge about these issues. We've got to be proactive. We've got to be advocates. We've got to be stewards. We've got to be all of the above, and we've got to start to do some work for ourselves. And, you know, we can spend $30, you know, to get into a ball. I think we can spend $10 a pop a person to really craft a program, an appropriate program for us, by us, that really allows us to have the kinds of projects and education in our community that's needed. And I don't know how many times I can say it to folks, but waiting for government, we might as well just scratch the Black folks and the Latin folks off the list of the demographic profile. I mean, we have to start to be that vigilant about how important our lives is, how important it is for us to survive and thrive as a community. I don't know any other way to do it. And it would be nice if Be the Generation could continue. But if it can't, what can we do as a community is a bigger question.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think in many ways you're preaching to the choir. You and I have had multiple conversations about that, and even most recently I was having a conversation about that with Sean Coleman, Sean Ebony, regarding his, you know, venturing off and starting his own nonprofit organization and even some of the challenges he's experienced regarding getting support from community. But ultimately I think, you know, that for us, bio strategies are going to be effective. How do we move forward with those kinds of strategies in a way that makes sense and build support for them at the same time? You know, putting $30 into a program that's going to support community mobilization and community awareness, I think is nice. I mean, besides sort of moving that direction, you know, how do we mobilize people? One of the other things that we know doing this work is, you know, the financial resources is a part of it, but definitely manpower is huge. And so being able to mobilize people to actually do the work, I think, is also critical.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next caller
we
have is 443-397. You're live on the air.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Jack. Hi, Jay. Hi, everybody. My name is Calvin. I just wanted to say some things and ask some questions. First of all, I would like to say thank you to Jack and Kelly, because this has been, like, a big thing that I believe the youth has to know about. And I know every time Kelly gets off the air, every time Jack gets done commentating, he always tells the girls to wrap it up and be safe. And, you know, I want to kind of piggyback on what Jay was saying earlier when he said, you know, it becomes an overload. But when you start to put it in things that is fun for us and for the younger generation, then it can become more of an awareness. But, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you all for that. And secondly, you know, like also Jay had asked, you know, if we could put $30 into the ballroom scene, why can't we do $20 towards, you know, a nonprofit organization or whatever. You know, I have no issue with that. My only problem with that is there are so many scamming nonprofit organizations. One pop up here, one pop up there. I have no issue with giving, but I just need to know that my money is going to be used for the right thing. And I guess for Ms. Michelle, Dr. Michelle, I wanted to ask you a couple questions. One being, when the girls use PrEP, does that mean they don't have to use Condom?
I would say, okay, go ahead.
And the second question is, I know it's going to, people are not going to want to hear it, but I actually want to know, can you go back and actually explain exactly what a prophylactic is? Because, you know, I was listening and I was interested, but I just wanted to know exactly what that prevents or what it does. You know, I just wanted to know some things.
Mm-hmm. Well, for your first question with regard to PrEP, so I think, you know, we have to, what Jay was saying before is paramount. PrEP might protect you from HIV if you take it the right way. But it's not going to protect you from the myriad of other sexually transmitted infections that are out there. And, you know, there was just a report that came out from the National Medical Association about the epidemic rates of hepatitis C in the African-American community. Each year we're seeing higher and higher syphilis rates in communities, particularly MSM communities. Gonorrhea, chlamydia are highest in our community. And, I mean, I could keep going on. So, yes, if you take PrEP, it's going to reduce your likelihood of getting HIV. But, you know, you're leaving yourself open to all of these other sexually transmitted infections that are out there. And who's to say that if you get one of these sexually transmitted infections, which, you know, any infection you get is weakening your immune system and, you know, opening you up for other infections. So I would say that that's probably not a smart move. Not a move that I would take anyway.
Okay.
And then your other question for prophylaxis, that was you asked. So basically, the best way to explain prophylaxis is that, you know, it's kind of something that you would take to protect you if you later come in contact with something. That's probably the best way to explain it. Is that a good way, Jay? I'm not sure how you guys explain it in Be the Generation.
I would probably not just say if you later come in contact with it. It just is a prevention tool that would stop you or prevent. The idea behind a prophylaxis is just to prevent the acquisition of any disease, period. Mm-hmm. And so I would kind of leave it at that because I don't want people to think that it's post-infection or post-coming in contact with an infection or infectious agent.
Okay, and one more question. Do you think, I mean, why do you think that, and I'm not trying to start nothing or anything like that, but I just want to know, why do you think that HIV, syphilis, gonorrhea, and other STIs are higher in the Latin and African American communities than more so in the Caucasian?
Is that for Michelle?
I mean, I just, there's so many M's. I think I want to jump in on that one. I think there's so many answers to that. I think first, a couple of the things that really affect African American and Latino communities are psychosocial issues. Lack of education, lack of economic resources, lack of, you know what I'm saying, having, like, you know, love is a big fact of it, you know, self-esteem. So thinking about all the different things that we have against us sometimes has kind of an effect on HIV infection. Also, not access to healthcare, you can't, sometimes you go in my neighborhood, it's really hard to find a place if I want to go and, you know, find a doctor, I have to have insurance. If I don't have insurance, do I pretend and go to my emergency room when I'm sick? You know, there's so many different layers of things that happen. So my whole conspiracy theory on my side is that we have a lot of stuff stacked against us that happens, that kind of, you know, puts us in that realm. But that's a whole other layer and a whole larger conversation that I'm sure I can go on forever about.
Yeah, because I was about to say, it really sucks that, not only, you know, now with the STIs, the STDs, but not only that, but we have hundreds of other things like, you know, diabetes and certain cancers and stuff that are, like, just designated for us. It really seems unfair But like you said, that is another whole topic. Once again, thank you for having me on, guys. Have a nice night. Thank you.
Thank you, Calvin, for definitely calling in. The next caller we have is 214-477. You're live on the air.
Hello, Kelly. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Yourself, love?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Jack, Jay, Aisha, Michelle?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Hello.
I'm doing good. This is J-Rock. I was calling to ask Dr. Michelle, well, to Jack, Jay, and Aisha, I know y'all been doing this a long time. Y'all been around a long time, seen a lot of things. Could y'all, like, give us an example of someone that you knew, I mean, like, not a name or anything, but a success story of you knew how long, the longest person you knew that lived with this and, you know, their successes. And to the doctor, could you touch on, because we got more than just, you know, gay people listening to this show, could you touch on, I'm trying to think of having children, HIV positive and having children and the partner getting on the, you know, getting on antivirals to, you know, have a baby naturally versus sperm washing?
Excellent questions. Excellent questions. Michelle, go ahead. You go first.
Yeah, well, I have to say that I don't have enough knowledge about sperm washing or, you know, the use of PrEP in partners who are looking to have babies. What I do know is that in this country, we have been extremely successful at preventing mother-to-child transmission of HIV, and that's largely because we've used antiretroviral therapy during pregnancy and have been extremely successful at that. So certainly being HIV positive is not a barrier to having children, but you know, I'm sorry, I don't know enough about sperm washing to really provide an accurate answer to that question.
Okay, and then is it true that if the, like, say for instance, the husband is HIV positive, when they get ready to have this baby, they put the wife or the girlfriend or whoever is going to get pregnant, they put them on an antiviral, and when the positive person is undetectable, now they can go ahead and start conceiving. Is this true?
I don't know enough about procreation among serodiscordant couples. I am not familiar with that literature. So I would say that if someone, a couple who is serodiscordant, is interested in having a child, that they should speak to their doctor and, you know, make sure that they're speaking to someone who is informed of, you know, all of the current advances. But my first thing would be to say to them that, you know, just because one partner is HIV positive does not mean that they cannot have children, and that there are ways to go forward with that. I just am not familiar with what those ways are.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And to the others, the success stories, you know, people that live past 10 years, 12 years after they were told they were going to die or whatever.
Yes. I definitely know somebody who's lived about 30 or 40 years with HIV, who's HIV positive and living a healthy life and doing well, has been on medication, actually on the cocktail diet, because tried to change medications to Truvada, but it didn't work out for him, and he is still on the 8 pills a day cocktail, living a good life, looking wonderful. So I definitely know that there's a lot of success stories, the people that, because it's really just about consistency, staying on your medication, making sure you're going to go see your doctor, and really just taking care of yourself, you know, eating right, not, you know what I'm saying, like just really taking care of yourself overall. And I definitely know people that are living really longer lives with HIV. And I think the question that you asked regarding the serodiscordant couple is true. That's kind of the answer that you said. But, you know, you have to definitely be underneath your doctor's care. And they do give you a medication where the HIV negative partner will not get become HIV positive. And also, sometimes babies are born and they create their own immune system. So more than likely, if the mother was HIV positive and a baby is born, it can seroconvert or not seroconvert. So it does happen. So they've been very, very successful with using drug therapy when it comes to Sarah Discordant couples.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to let folks know, if you are in the group, I posted some guidelines, some treatment guidelines that came from the World Health Organization that talks a little bit about Sarah Discordant couples, and I just posted some other resources in there that talks about fertility treatment as well as causes of Sarah Discordant couples, how do they manage the decisions around having a baby and those kinds of things. So I'm posting those things as we speak, so hopefully these things will be helpful.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks.
Kelly, any other questions?
Yes, the next caller. Thank you, J-Rock, for definitely calling in.
J-Rock.
No problem.
Is 786-262. You're live on the air.
Yes, good evening, everybody. Kelly, Jay, Jack, Dr. Aisha, Aisha, and then Dr. Michelle. Yes, ma'am.
Work,
all right.
Aisha. Work, Aisha.
By faith. By faith,
honey.
You're going to say that. We're right. By faith, you're going to say that. By faith. So what I'm trying to say, though, is that I am the owner of the ISIS Foundation down here in Miami-Dade County, and I'm so troubled to hear the information that you shared to me about how the Be the Generation project is ending December 31st. I think that the work that you guys do is very on point. And so my question is, how could I, as a CBO, work with you guys in order to find out how you could position yourself in redeveloping a new campaign in Miami-Dade County, more specifically because how Miami-Dade County is now number one in the nation for new AIDS and HIV cases, and that is reported by the Florida Health Department. And then also how the state of Florida is number two in the nation for new pediatric AIDS cases, which for us, being a family-based organization, is a family indicator. So is there any looks, are there any discussions to moving in the state of Florida? I know on one point when it comes to ballroom, you understand me, a lot of people feature the scene if there's a hot ballroom scene in that state. But on the flip side, considering society, the epidemic is so high, you understand me? So where are you guys looking to position yourself? And then also for Ms. Aisha, if she could piggyback on that question, because she mentioned some things about how socioeconomic disparities are indicators of the onset of the HIV-AIDS virus. And my study is that AIDS and HIV is directly proportionate to poverty. So perhaps one day I could make a talk to you on the phone and you can give me some feedback on how the effects of poverty actually in this totality dictate, AIDS and HIV. But starting with the B generation for Dr. Michelle, are you guys looking to move to the state of Florida, specifically Miami-Dade County?
Right. Well, I think as Stefan was alluding to before and as Jay has mentioned, because of the current budget cuts, we are just really trying to see if where you're going to be around, honestly.
Wow.
That's where it is right now. Nothing will be final until the end of the year, but we are certainly in conversations about how to keep some of the programming going, because I do think, and I think a lot of other people concur, that it's extremely important. So once we find out if there is a Be the Generation project, then we can start thinking about where to expand to. And, I lived in Miami Beach for 4 years, so I know that it's much needed in Miami-Dade County.
Definitely, definitely. I would like to say, and then to Ms. Aisha, I would like to say that I had a meeting with the Florida Health Department, so if at any point I connect you with the contact down there so that you can make a presentation and we could come up with some coordination, maybe a fundraiser with the support of the Health Department, then whatever I can do, please let me know to support or perpetuate the goals of this project, all right?
Well, thank you.
Wonderful.
Yes, ma'am. And then now to Aisha, about the poverty indicators. What more indicators do you find? You mentioned about a lack of education, unemployment. What other indicators do you find that are synonymous with the onset of the AIDS and HIV virus?
Homelessness, definitely one of the key
kind of like cofactors, I think, to also HIV infection in many ways, because, because survival sex happens then, survival sex happens with homelessness.
Exactly.
Which can lead to HIV infection because, if a John is going to pay me a little bit more money not to use a condom, I'm probably not going to use a condom.
Exactly. Okay.
And also there's a lot of education out there, but there's still some people out there that don't know how to even correctly use a condom.
Exactly.
So
and the problem, it's not a mandate in the health systems. I don't know if it's like that in New York also, but it bothered me how in the high school system they don't require health classes, especially considering sexual health and development to be a core class to graduate.
Exactly. So, we're still dealing with that when it comes to sexual health on a large scale because of the religious impact in schooling and stuff like that. But that's a larger question. And I also think self-esteem issues also leads to HIV infection.
Okay, self-esteem.
Can I add something to that? It's really not my thought, but maybe, Michelle, you want to talk about it? Because I remember us having a conversation about this some time back, Michelle, about kind of dating out of class and what that does in a minority community. You want to talk at all about that, Michelle?
Yeah, sure. Let me first say that one of the main reasons that I have committed myself to HIV is I feel like HIV is the one disease that sort of takes the blinders off of all of the social ills, So if you are marginalized or somehow, made to not, fully appreciate the person that you are because of larger societal issues, that puts you more at risk for HIV. Whether you're in a violent relationship, you're homeless, you're a commercial sex worker, you're doing survival sex, or in this instance, what Jay is referring to is, since the early 60s, marriage has been under attack in this country, from both fronts, really. There's been an attack on marriage because marriage is this holy institution, and under no circumstances can we allow same-sex couples to get married. On the other side, marriage has been attacked in that divorce rates have been skyrocketing in all communities, since that time. And what has also happened in black communities is that black men are removed from the community at astronomical rates. Homicide has been an issue in the black community for two decades now. Young black men, as young as 10, homicide is in the top 10 leading causes of death. We're talking about little boys who are 10, all the way up to, in the 50s, homicide is one of the top 10 leading causes of death for black men. Black men are incarcerated more than any other people in this country, and the United States is leading in its incarceration of its people. And as I said, of those, black men represent the large majority, followed closely by Hispanic men. So what we see is men being constantly removed from our communities, whether you're black or Hispanic. So what has happened as a result of that is that there's a dearth of black men in our communities, and so we have seen that people who are generally low risk, they have, maybe having sex with one person a year, using condoms, are much more likely to partner with people who are considered higher risk, which is, having sex with five or more people a year, you know, which may not seem like high risk, but that was, I'm quoting this one study that showed that there was this sort of, it's called discordant couples. So a person who's low risk dating someone who's high risk. And so we see that more and more, not only among, you know, black women dating black men, but black men dating other black men. And I don't know if that is the case in the Hispanic community, because I haven't seen any anything that has been published about that. But I know anecdotally, in speaking to some of my Hispanic colleagues, that that seems to be an issue for them as well. So there are many, many things that have happened structurally and socially that increase risk for our community. And I mean, many of my wonderful co-speakers on this program tonight have mentioned these, you know, and I really think for me what HIV says is that we as a community, you know, need to have each other's back. You know, we can't, you know, stigmatize people because they're positive, or stigmatize someone because they're too feminine, or stigmatize someone because, you know, they're HIV positive, you know. And I mean, I still have people who come in to see me who say, you know, that their family members, I mean, it's 2013, their family members won't eat after them because they know they're positive. And you can't get HIV from eating after someone, you know, and we've established that. That should be pretty common knowledge. But, you know, I think there's so much stigma and so much that divides folks that, you know, one of the, I think, the things that could really prevent HIV the most, besides all these biomedical preventions, is that we really do something to address stigma. There was a study a couple years ago that looked at attitudes towards homosexuality in the United States, and looking at whether or not they've changed in the past 30 years. And attitudes towards homosexuals have improved for almost every community except for African-American communities. And that was just one study. So, you know, I mean, take it or leave it. But, I mean, I know I live in the black community, and I hear what people say, and I know that, you know, we have a long way to come to accept a lot of our brothers and sisters for who they are, you know, whether they're gay or too feminine or HIV positive or, you know, trying to live a life after being incarcerated, you know, trying to get back on track after they've been in jail for 5 years or so. I mean, so I really feel like we have to have each other's back more so, you know, now than ever in terms of HIV prevention for our community, especially with money dwindling, you know, and I mean, Jay was getting at that before, as were some of the other speakers.
So much.
Thanks
for those questions.
Thank you, Carla. The next caller that we have is 617-752. You're live on the air. 617-752. You're live on the air. Okay. The next caller we have is 917-379. You're live on the air.
Hey, what's popping, everybody?
Hi, Dre.
Hey, what's going on, folks? Hey, I just want to say, I haven't been a monk in a long time, and I'm just really elated to come onto a call of this caliber of positivity. You know, I might not be on the scene a lot these days. My public relations team have me, like, in the cut for a minute, you know, working on some very strong endeavors, and a lot of it has a lot to do with the community. But I will say that I'm aware of a lot of the negativity that still goes around. Some things just don't never change. And it's just an umbrella of ignorance that go around. First of all, I want to, you know, give the collaboration of facilitation and the question and answer panel a strong thumbs up. From what I'm hearing, it's Aisha, Jay, Kelly, Jack, Martha, and all, I'm familiar with all y'all, miss all y'all. Michelle, I'm not familiar with, but thumbs up, Michelle, because you are doing your thing in this call. I just want to say that you know, I heard somebody saying something about giving the $30, if you can give $30 for a ball, why not be able to give $30 for some type of prevention, intervention, or something of that sort? And I'm wondering, like, you know, and this is something that probably would go to the coalition. I don't know how active the coalition is at this point, but what about promoters having a percentage that they give back out of their heart based upon what's going on in our community? Because our community is so divided and conquered just by people being in different houses and going against each other at head-to-head ballroom competition, you know? And coming from the era, you know, Jack was saying when I first started listening about the era that he come from. I come from an era before him. And, you know, we all was affected or affected by HIV one way or another since this pandemic surfaced, you know. And like I said, it divided and conquered us. I just don't understand in 2013 how people slander each other with reads of health and everything, when so many of us lost so many people, you know what I'm saying, based upon, you know what I'm saying, this pandemic, you know. And then looking at, you know, you got the different forums. I'm well aware of some things that was going on recently. And I'm wondering if the people, I can hear the positivity of the people that's on this call, but just wondering whether we just preach it to the choir, definitely, because in all, a lot of the people that do the things that's so counterproductive to what was trying to be done to take things to the next level, they don't participate. They only participate in the negativities, you know. Looking at just from my agency experience, working in agency and just being a part of HIV awareness since 1983, just being a part of a house and growing up amongst and then being in it on a professional level as a career, just the agency war and the politics that go on. Sometimes it reminds me of the drug dealers that don't want each other on each other's block. That's how I've seen these agencies fight for numbers and everything and just tear each other down. And to me, that's dividing and conquering the level of prevention that could be done as a whole for the community, you know. And then just looking at non-traditional versus traditional interventions, because some things are just done over and over again, and there's so many non-traditional ways that AIDS could be prevented. But a lot of times, because you got people at the top that got clinical knowledge and clinical training and degrees, but them versus the people that got experience in the community, if those people, and you got, I just named Aisha Day, Jack, these are people, you know what I'm saying, that have that experience walking, being part of houses, being a part of the community. You know, these people got experience and also got clinical knowledge and training, degrees and everything. Those are the pivotal people really in the community, because a person that just, and a lot of times people that just got clinical background, they be at the top by default. So they don't even listen. So they don't even listen to the people that's on the front line, and the front line people is the one that's in the trenches constantly. You know what I'm saying, getting things firsthand to bring back. So if the teamwork there, you know what I'm saying, is lacking in a lot of the ways that prevention can be done. You know what I'm saying, and that's one of the reasons why people of color are and actually contracting constantly, because it's just, it's so many ways that society has it for that reason. I mean, it's no way that anybody should be blind to the fact that a lot of that is being done consciously, you know. And that's pretty much what I get out of the call. I just want to say that I really, really, really am heart, this was a heartfelt call for me to come back to, because I haven't been amongst for a while. And I want to say God bless all of y'all, you know. And there's some things, y'all just stay tuned, because there's some things I felt like, and I'm going to say this, I've watched people that go through the status thing and the scene and all that, and the status thing kills me, because first of all, if you're an icon in the scene, I want everybody to understand, an icon shouldn't be worried about things so mediocre as their house winning House of the Year and all that. They should be pulling together, collaborating, and being advocates for the community as a whole. And like I said, God bless y'all. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you so
thank
much,
you.
Dre.
Thank you, Dre. Right before you guys, I want to first take a quick second to commend you.
You know, people may know that I came from Alpha Ebony, and Dre is my father, but he's also a Blahnik scholar, and in his work, he has really transformed his own life and his own experiences around this work. I just wanted to commend you for that, why I had the opportunity to do it publicly.
Thank you so much, baby, and I miss y'all. I miss y'all so much. Y'all just don't know, you know?
Dre.
Love you, Dre.
I would add one thing to what Dre said I think is really critical, that the infighting that we experience here is really on a small scale, a microcosm of something much bigger. You know, when we're out there trying to advocate, and that's for anyone that's called, I work with Michelle on several proposals or projects. You know, when we're out there talking about this community, people are looking at us like we have no value. And that's not just the ball community. It's the Black community. It's the women's community. Every quote-unquote minority community has a light shined upon them in a negative light. But how we transform that is the work that we have to do. And I wonder if you know, when I'm talking about, you know, to my colleagues about, you know, the ball community, they're like, what? Isn't it just a bunch of fighting and a bunch of kids voguing? And when they see the depth of the kinds of relationships that we form and the strength of the network that we have across this country, then they're blown away. And so I think we have got to be better communicators of, A, our own plight, B, the needs of our community, and C, we've got to demonstrate a cohesion that they have never seen before. If not, we'll always be looked at or looked upon as the bottom of the barrel. And I think we have some work to do around that ourselves. I think Dre hit that hit the nail on the head with that.
Jack has something to say.
In regards to everybody talking about, you know, funding and the different agencies, I think also we as leaders of our own houses, I have to move out to Rosie Kelly. We as leaders of our houses, in our meetings, we all can take steps into definitely passing out information to our children. You know, to me, information is care. To me, information can be prevention. As long as we're, you know, doing it in a way, your meeting should start off with, you know, just letting them know the agencies and the times that they can go to get tested. Something as simple as that, having condoms at your meeting and lubricant in your house so that, you know, your kids can come in. It's not that you're having a whorehouse. But basically, you just want to know you can be who you are. A couple of years back, Aisha, remember we worked on a campaign saying you can be risky, but be risk-free.
Yeah.
You know, but just we as leaders, those are the changes we need to worry about instead of worrying about what other communities think about us, because we have lives to save, and I think that should be our priority as of this point on.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Okay, the next caller that we have is 678-752. You're live on the air. 678-752, you're live on the air. Okay, I guess not. So, Aisha, you can definitely take it away with your closing remarks.
Hi, everybody. I guess this is, I already prepped you for this question already, so all you have to do is really kind of answer it. I just want to go around everybody that was on this call. First of all, I want to thank you all for being on this call and for educating the community as we have, and we have to continue having these conversations. So, I want to go around and just ask everybody if they have, like, a closing message for the community as a whole regarding BTG and also regarding prevention as a whole as for our communities. I'll start with Jack.
For me, again, I just want everybody to just be out there and say, if you can find confidence in someone, if you can help somebody, let's make it work. I mean, we're all here, and we're all, you know, we may battle each other on the ballroom floor. We may not love each other and like each other every single day, but we don't want to see any more of us dying. We don't see any more of us getting sick and not living long, healthy lives and living up to the potential and the talent that's within us. The world has changed, and now the world is more ready for us to be more prominent than ever before. So I think that people really should take life seriously and take themselves seriously and just stay healthy in all aspects and all ways.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes.
Jay?
My message would be really get involved. There can never be enough hands doing this work. We all have to put our own time in, put our own energy, put our own resources in. Get involved. Go up to Jack. Go up to myself, Stefan, anybody in the community, and figure out how to plug your energy, your lifeline into it. Without it, we're going to be damaged. And so I just encourage everyone to do that.
Michelle?
My closing remark would be, you know, to really get involved and, you know, you have to be the change you want to be. And I feel as though, you know, we all have to be crusaders against stigma. And, you know, if we hear someone saying something about someone who's HIV positive or about, you know, anything really, that, you know, we have to be able to voice our dislike of it, you know. And I also have to say, you know, this wasn't going to be part of my closing remark, but it was brought up by the wonderful man who was just speaking before. He was talking about recognizing expertise at the community level and in, you know, as opposed to researchers. I think the flip side of that also is that we need more black folks, you know, making some of the decisions that are being made in research. You know, we need more people who are the principal investigators, which means that, you know, we all need to support our brothers and sisters who are, you know, attempting to get higher education or trying to you know, do research or whatever it may be. So, you know, that's all I have to say.
Martha?
Well, I just want to say it's been an honor and a privilege working with Jack and Jay, Pony, Deshaun, Malachi, Michael, Shannon, Fuzzy. Our team is very unique and family-like, definitely. We have our ups and downs, but we had a job to do, and the job was to go out into the ballroom community to bring awareness to lots of new changes that are occurring in HIV prevention. And I really appreciate the fact that we were able to do the project and carry ourselves beyond runway. We'll continue to be alive on our Facebook page. And, you know, from Reach LA in Los Angeles to go national to be able to do this work, it's really been an honor and a privilege to go out there and meet so many incredible people from city to city who just embraced all of us. So I want to thank everybody.
And my message is really just really simplistic for us to kind of look into ourselves and take care of ourselves first, too. Before we start thinking about the community, think about ourselves, making sure that we are also doing the things that we want the community to do, because we can't tell the community to do stuff and we're not doing the same things. So let's not be hypocrites. Let's really start to work as leaders and as community movers and shakers to do what it is that we want the community to do, which is if it is getting physicals or really taking care of yourself as a whole. So I think that as we start to take care of ourselves, it will trickle out as we'll take care of the community. So regardless of whatever, take care of you first, and then you can then step out and take care of the community. That's my message. Thank you so much for having us on the show. Thanks, Kelly.
I definitely want to thank all of y'all for definitely coming and, you know, and being a part of the show and definitely seeing this as an outlet where y'all could definitely get your message across to the community, because everybody thinks this show is just so much negativity when it's not. It's a lot more that can be done with this show that can definitely branch out to the community and definitely get your message across for everybody, not just in the ballroom scene, because there's other people that listen to this show besides the ballroom community. And your message can be heard, and it's definitely information that's going to be funneled out that everybody can get. So I definitely do want to thank all of y'all for definitely coming here and being a part of this that we have been doing here for the last 6 years. It's great to have y'all on the show. And I also want to thank everybody that has called in tonight and listened to the show. I want to thank all the callers that called in and had so many questions that they wanted to get answered. And y'all, I hope that y'all definitely did get your answers to the questions that you want to ask, to everybody that was in the chat room that was listening, to the numbers staying so high when it's a positive show, because a lot of these girls do not like positive. They only feed off the negative. So I definitely want to thank everybody that definitely did stay tuned and listen to everything that had to be said here tonight, and so I definitely get your message. But like I tell y'all, every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when we're on the air, whatever bathroom, whatever alleyway you definitely do go into, please make sure you do practice safe sex, because the life you save will definitely be your own. So once again, I definitely do want to thank y'all, and I hope y'all definitely come back and y'all use this format whenever y'all want to. Y'all know the contact information. Just reach out to us. Our hand is your hand.
Safe sex coming from the legendary Jermaine McGuire.
Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. Good luck, everyone.
Good
night,
everybody. Kelly. Yes.
Martha has something that she has to say.
So if you like this show, go on Facebook, find BTG Ballroom Community Outreach Team, and give us a like. There's also a link there to do a survey. It'll take you 2 seconds to do. We would love your feedback and really appreciate you all listening tonight.
Thank you, Martha, for that.
Buddy.
For everybody that's out here and you're listening to the show, definitely tonight was definitely a positive show. But if you want to get all the gossip and all the drama and all the tea and all the shade that y'all was supposed to get tonight, definitely tune in tomorrow night where y'all definitely get that bit side of me. But y'all will definitely get Kelly Mizrahi. Y'all will see me from this house tonight. Kelly Mizrahi will be live back on the air tomorrow night for all the shade and all the drama on Trash Talk Tuesday. And don't forget to tune in on Wednesday night to the State of Emergency show with the icon and CEO and founder, Jasmine Couture. I love y'all all for loving me, and have a good night, and I'm going to take y'all away with our commercial.
Bye-bye.
The Carolina People's Choice Ball, Saturday, February 8th, 2014, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Grand prize, $1,500. Butch Queen Schoolboy versus Pretty Boy Realness. Grand prize number two, $1,000 for Female Figure Runway. $500 mini grands include Open to All Best Dress, Female Figure Face, Butch Queen European versus All American Runway, Butch Queen Legendary Performance, and many more $250 cash categories. Over $6,000 will be awarded on this night as we honor the fans' favorite and recognize the people's choice. Again, that's Saturday, February 8th, 2014 in North Carolina. Admission, $30 all night. $200, seats 10 with refreshments. Available for advance purchase only. Your commentators, Jack and Selvin Mizrahi. Your DJ, Bonalore St. Laurent. For more information, contact Overall Father Dede Khan, Chicken Ebony, or Marcus Escada, or see the Facebook event page at Carolina People's Choice Ball. See you there. Dallas, Texas. Get ready. The Who Do You Think You Are Ball. Saturday, November 30th. Presented by Abounding Prosperity, along with the icon pioneer, Larry Ebony, and the Gulf Coast Prince, Kendall Escada. Grand prize, $1,500. Open to all realness, with the look and attitude of a celebrity. Mini grand, open to all sex siren for $500. Open to all best dress, $500. Open to all runway, $500. And performance blitz for $250. That's the Who Do You Think You Are Ball, Saturday, November 30th in Dallas, Texas. The location, Fiesta Event Center, 704 South Walton Boulevard, Dallas, Texas. Doors open at 7, LSS, at 8 p.m. Your commentator, the icon, Jack Mizrahi. Admission, $30. Tables, $100 before November 15th, $150 afterwards. There will be HIV testing at the event center and free admission for those that get tested. Again, the Who Do You Think You Are Ball, presented by Abounding Prosperity, the icon Larry Ebony, and Prince $10 Scotta. For more information, visit Facebook and the event page for November 30th. The Who Do You Think You Are Ball.